This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
So that's a little shout out to our friends in Australia, but also because did you know that Waltzing Matilda, as unusual as this might sound, was Bertrand Russell's favorite tune? At least that's what he wrote a little boy. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and today is the birthday of the famous agnostic and revered philosopher Bertrand Russell, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist. As Annie Laurie said, May the 18th, 2013 show. We podcast, and we also broadcast in a number of other states around the country, including New York, in California, in Missouri, and in Michigan.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of FFRF, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is enjoying our 35th anniversary as a national group this spring. And my mother and I and a gentleman from Milwaukee co-founded it, actually back in 1976 as a regional group, and then went national in 78. And we have grown from the original three members in a dining room table volunteer operation to the largest association of freethinkers, atheists, and agnostics in North America, with more than 19,000 members. And gee, we wish we could get to 20,000 really soon. So if you're a regular listener and not a member, please join us, not someday, but today, at FFRF.org. And we are a 501c3 educational charity working to keep religion out of government.
FFRF's attorneys have been very busy recently. Currently, we have 13 active cases in the courts.
And we have another case about to be filed.
And our three cases, for example, against the IRS are proceeding along. We've talked about them on our show. But besides the litigation, FFRF's staff attorneys have been very busy racking up victories without going to court, simply by writing very strong letters.
And today we're going to catch up with FFRF staff attorney Patrick Elliott, one of our four attorneys, and talk about some very impressive state church victories that he's been involved in lately. But to get back to the IRS, it's been in the news, and you know, we've had the acting commissioner deposed over this Tea Party scandal, the idea that Tea Party groups that were applying for tax exemption were being stalled and subject to a lot of stumbling blocks and much greater scrutiny. And that's bad, but we think it should be pointed out that the axe did not fall. Nobody was fired when it's been repeatedly pointed out by the media and by FFRF's electioneering lawsuit filed last fall that many tax-exempt churches are violating electioneering law by advocating from the pulpit who you should vote for. And of course, most of those churches that have been engaged often in this sort of civil disobedience where they're flagrantly pointing out that they are violating from the pulpit, it's engineered by groups. These are religious right groups. These are the same people who, for the most part, like Tea Partiers. Mm-hmm. And so we think there's something missing from the press coverage here and something missing from the emphasis.
Because the IRS is deliberately looking the other way. They're allowing these churches to get away with, if I can put it in quotes, to get away with murder.
Well, IRS code murder, yeah. Murder of the IRS code. And also, it's been pointed out that all they really need to do is fill a vacancy. And there was a court decision in Minnesota pointing out that they didn't have anybody in charge of scrutinizing electioneering, illegal electioneering by churches. And this has been going on for 4 or 5 years. So we have a very important lawsuit in federal court here in Madison, Wisconsin. And this week, our attorney, Rich Bolton, just filed an important brief in that. So we'll be keeping you posted on that kind of scandal.
Bertrand Russell, as we talked about earlier, was born in 1872 on today's date, May the 18th. And we didn't play Happy Birthday. We played his favorite song, Waltzing Matilda. Bertrand Russell was known as Bertie to his friends. During his 97 years, he did all he could to add to human knowledge and to inspire kindness on this planet. He was a mathematician. He called his first encounter with Euclid as dazzling as first love. He was a philosopher and a social activist who authored 75 books. He launched headlong into a life of radicalism in his 40s as a pacifist opposing World War I. He liked to recount his experience at prison where he was sentenced for his pacifism. I was much cheered on by my arrival by the warden at the gate of prison, and the warden had to take particulars about me. He asked my religion, and I replied, agnostic. He then asked, how do you spell that? And then he remarked with a sigh, well, there are many religions, but I suppose they all worship the same God. This remark kept me cheerful for about a week. Bertrand Russell spent his last years courageously working for nuclear disarmament. He wrote, once said on a BBC broadcast, cruel men believe in a cruel God and use their belief to excuse their cruelty. Only kindly men believe in a kindly God, and they'd be kindly in any case. He also said in his book, What I Believe, happiness is nonetheless true happiness because it must come to an end, nor do thought and love lose their value because they are not everlasting.
And we are still selling. That was from What I Believe, from Bertrand Russell's book, Why I Am Not a Christian, that came out in 57. For many years, and until very recently in the last decade, that was really the only free thought book you could reliably find in public libraries. But it's still a classic, and we still make it available at FFRF. And thankfully, there's a lot more Dawkins and Hitchens and bestsellers added to it. Now, I want to read something else from Bertrand Russell, but first let's hear his own voice. This is something that we played last year. We want to make it an annual event. This is Bertrand Russell's Time Capsule.
Suppose, Lord Russell, this film were to be looked at by our descendants like a Dead Sea Scroll in 1,000 years' time. What would you think it's worth telling that generation about the life you've lived and the lessons you've learned from it?
I should like to say two things. One intellectual and one moral. The intellectual thing I should want to say to them is this. When you are studying any matter or considering any philosophy, ask yourself only, what are the facts and what is the truth that the facts bear out? Never let yourself be diverted either by what you would wish to believe or by what you think would have beneficent social effects if it were believed. But look only and solely at what are the facts. That is the intellectual thing that I should wish to say. The moral thing I should wish to say to them is very simple. I should say, love is wise, hatred is foolish. In this world, which is getting more and more closely interconnected, we have to learn to tolerate each other. We have to learn to put up with the fact that some people say things that we don't like. We can only live together in that way. And if we are to live together and not die together, we must learn a kind of charity and a kind of tolerance, which is absolutely vital to the continuation human life on this planet.
That's Bertrand Russell, and here is a TV interview he did in the late 1950s on CBC TV.
Why are you not a Christian?
Because I see no evidence whatever for any of the Christian dogmas. I've examined all the stock arguments in favor of the existence of God, and none of them seem to me to be logically valid.
Do you think there's a practical reason for having a religious belief for many people?
Well, there can't be a practical reason for believing what isn't true. That's quite, at least I rule it out as impossible. Either the thing is true or it isn't. If it is true, you should believe it, and if it isn't, you shouldn't. And if you can't find out whether it's true or whether it isn't, you should suspend judgment. But you can't, it seems to me, a fundamental dishonesty and a fundamental treachery to intellectual integrity to hold a belief because you think it's useful and not because you think it's true.
Well, I was thinking of those people who find that some kind of religious code helps them to live their lives. It gives them a very strict set of rules, the rights and the wrongs.
Yes, but you know, those rules are generally quite mistaken. A great many of them do more harm than good, and they would probably be able to find a rational morality that they could live by if they dropped this irrational, traditional, taboo morality that comes down from savage ages.
But are we, perhaps the ordinary person, perhaps isn't strong enough to find this own personal ethic? They have to have something imposed upon them from outside.
Oh, I don't think that's true. And what is imposed on you from outside is of no value, whatever. It doesn't count.
Well, you were brought up, of course, as a Christian. When did you first decide that you did not want to remain a believer in the Christian ethic?
I never decided that I didn't want to remain a believer. I decided between the ages of 15 and 18, I spent almost all my spare time thinking about Christian dogmas and trying to find out whether there was any reason to believe them. And by the time I was 18, I discarded the last of them.
Do you think that that gave you an extra strength in your life?
Oh, I don't know. No, I shouldn't have said so. Neither extra strength nor the opposite. I mean, I was just engaged in the pursuit of knowledge.
As you approach the end of life, do you have any fear of some kind of afterlife, or do you feel that that is just an
impossibility? No, I think that's nonsense.
There is no afterlife?
None whatever.
Do you have any fear of something that is common amongst atheists and agnostics, who have been atheists or agnostics all their lives, who are converted just before they die to a form of religion?
Well, you know, it doesn't happen nearly as often as religious people think it does. Because religious people, most of them, think that it's a virtuous act to tell lies about the deathbeds of agnostics and such. As a matter of fact, it doesn't happen very often.
And it didn't happen with Bertrand Russell, but that was fun listening to him. And I do want to read what his version of the Ten Commandments. It was something he wrote for the New York Times Magazine in December 16th, 1951. And he said that, of course, he rejected that one, and he would wish to promulgate what these 10 thoughts that he set forth. 1, do not feel absolutely certain of anything. 2, do not think it worthwhile to proceed by concealing evidence, for the evidence is sure to come to light, and that's very timely with political scandals right now. 3, never try to discourage thinking, for you are sure to succeed. That's one of my favorites. 4, when you meet with opposition, even if it should be from your husband or your children, endeavor to overcome it by argument and not by authority, for a victory dependent upon authority is unreal and illusory. 5, have no respect for the authority of others, for there are always contrary authorities to be found. 6, do not use power to suppress opinions you think pernicious, for if you do, the opinions will suppress you. 7, do not fear to be eccentric in opinion, for every opinion now accepted was once eccentric. 8, find more pleasure in intelligent dissent than in passive agreement, for if you value intelligence as you should, the former implies a deeper agreement than the latter. 9, be scrupulously truthful, even if the truth is inconvenient, for it is more inconvenient when you try to conceal it. And 10, this is the 10th Non-Commandment by Bertrand Russell. Do not feel envious of the happiness of others who live in a fool's paradise, for only a fool will think that it is happiness.
And that was Annie Laurie reading Bertrand Russell's 10 Thoughts, Not 10 Commandments. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio. The outro music that you're listening to on today's show is from a new album called Flow by the band AMP, A-M-P. The pianist is a young member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. His name is Addison Fry. He's 21. He'll be a senior at the University of North Texas in the fall.
Addison's parents, Mark and Brenda, have been members for 10 years, along with their other children, Bailey and Garen.
You can see a bio and gig schedule for Addison Fry at his website, addisonfrei.com. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio. Welcome back to Radio as Godless as Our Constitution. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and this is Free Thought Radio.
We just heard Bertrand Russell explaining why he is not a Christian and why he doesn't believe in life after death. We talk about Christianity on the show a lot, obviously, since that's the major religion here, but let's not ignore the other superstitions, such as reincarnation.
The cowboy poet Wallace D. McCrae wrote a great poem called Reincarnation, which Dan has set to music.
What does reincarnation mean? A cowpoke asked his friend. His pal replied, it happens when your life has reached its end. They comb your hair and wash your neck and clean your fingernails and lay you in a padded box away from life's travails. The box in you goes in a hole that's been dug into the ground. Reincarnation starts in when you're planted neath a mound. Them clods melt down just like your box and you who is inside. And then you're just beginning on your transformation ride. In a while, the grass will grow upon your rendered mound. Till someday on your moldered grave, a lonely flower is found. And say a hoss should wander by and graze upon this flower that once was you but now's become your vegetative bower. That the hoss done ate up with his other feed makes bone and fat and muscle essential to the steed. But some is left that he can't use, and so it passes through and finally lays upon the ground this thing that once was you. Then say by chance I wanders by and sees this on the ground, and I ponders and I wonders at this object that I found. I thinks of reincarnation, of life and death and such, and come away concluding, Slim, you ain't changed all that much.
Cute song. That was Dan singing Reincarnation, written by cowboy poet Wallace D. McCrae. And that can be found on FFRF's Friendly Neighborhood Atheist CD.
So, and then we have three CDs, Friendly Neighborhood Atheist, Beware of Dogma, and then the brand new one, Adrift on a Star.
And you can get those at FFRF.org/shop.
Well, stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio. We're going to be talking with Patrick Elliott, the FFRF, one of the FFRF attorneys who's been working very hard to keep religion and government separate. And we're going to talk about an exciting recent victory in the state of Oklahoma, which is a good story to tell. I'm Dan Bark with Annie Laurie Gaylor, so stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
And I'm Annie Laurie, and we are going to be talking today, and we have in studio with us one of our four staff attorneys, Patrick Elliott. Why don't you say hi, Patrick?
Hi, I'm happy to be here.
But we want to set up the interview first by saying that we were talking about Bertrand Russell's Decalogue, his 10 thoughts, not 10 commandments. And we're going to talk with Patrick about two major victories that he had removing 10 commandments. And to set that up, in 1980, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a decision, Stone versus Graham, saying you can't put up 10 commandments in public schools. And lo and behold, we have run into two of the most egregious, outrageous cases of 10 commandments in schools that Patrick has ended just this month, one in Tulsa and one in
South of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and one in Kentucky.
And so before Patrick comes on and talks about that, we do have a little clip about the Tulsa violation, News on 6.
Muldrow High School is tucked away in eastern Oklahoma, and now it's the spotlight of a religious debate. The question, should Ten Commandment plaques be allowed inside every high school classroom? It's a tradition the school says dates back decades. A student tipped off a national nonprofit organization called Freedom From Religion Foundation. The foundation sent this letter to the Muldrow superintendent asking him to remove all signs or face a lawsuit. To avoid legal drama, the school took down all signs late last week, and they don't plan to put them back on the walls.
When it's clearly decided, there's no point in continuing to fight a losing battle.
It might be better for them to take them down just so they don't lose a bunch of money that they need to buy books and everything that we need.
Ashley King, News on 6 tonight.
Well, so Patrick, I think that was a broadcast before the final vote, the final approval this week, that they have to stay down. Why don't you tell us more about it?
Yeah, well, we were contacted in April by a student at the high school and reported on these being in Ten Commandments placards being in every single classroom on the walls. And, you know, he knew it was a violation and asked us to help out by, sending a legal letter. And so we did so on May 1st, you know, asking for immediate compliance. And we did hear back from the legal counsel for the school district agreeing that they would be coming down. Initially, it sounds like there was some resistance because teachers were tasked with taking, you know, the individual plaques down in their rooms, and it sounded like they weren't going to do that, and they were not doing so until we again followed up with their attorney, who you heard one of their attorneys in that news clip saying, this is settled law, you can't have the Ten Commandments up in schools. And so on May 10th, those Ten Commandments placards came down, and then the following Monday, the school board took on the issue.
Last Monday.
Yeah.
And what did they do?
Well, they voted to keep them down. So we're pleased with that outcome.
Yeah, we were kind of holding our breath there. Are they going to be really obdurate and totally violate the law, or are they going to follow it? Now, do you have any idea how many placards there were up and how many schools?
We don't really know. It sounds like it. You know, they were certainly in the high school and I believe the middle school, junior high school there, but in basically every single classroom. So I don't know. The full size. It sounds like this is the lone high school in this community, but certainly
and
a number.
This is Muldrow,
Oklahoma. Yes,
and that's eastern Oklahoma, real close to the Arkansas border, right across from Fort Smith, right next to the interstate. Is that Interstate 40 that goes through there? So it's a little town.
It's right near the border. So I know both Arkansas and Oklahoma have been paying attention to this issue. Hopefully, they're being educated about this violation.
Well, should we listen to...
One other question. Do we have any idea how long they were up?
You know, people have said they've been there into the 1990s, so some people have said decades, and I don't know. We don't know initially when they put up, but certainly they have been there for a very long time.
Well, it's a great victory.
And they're saying, of course, it's the money. They're not saying, well, we shouldn't do this. We just can't afford to fight this lawsuit. So the kid, Patrick, his name is Gage. Let's talk about him in a second because there's a backstory to this. But Fort Smith News, KFSM5, ran an interview about this as well, in which Gage himself was actually interviewed. This is just a little clip from KSFM News out of Fort Smith. His name is Gage Pulliam.
Tonight, hundreds of parents and students gathered at Muldrow High School to hear arguments over religion in the classroom. The issue came up after Gage Pulliam, a high school student, voiced a complaint to the Freedom for Religion Foundation.
People think I'm attacking their religion. I'm really not. I'm trying to help others so they can feel equal in a world, in a town, that I just want them to feel equal here.
In Muldrow, Meredith Baldwin, 5 News.
So you've been talking and emailing with Gage. Tell us something about him.
Well, you know, he's very brave. It sounds like he, knew the right thing to do. I mean, for a 16-year-old, he's a junior in high school. He has a very good understanding for the First Amendment and the Establishment Clause and, kind of put himself out there, you know, after other people, I guess, were being accused of being the person to complain. And so that's
he identified himself.
He did identify himself, and he has received some threats. It was reported at the school board meeting, which he attended with his family, that, you know, his dad overheard somebody basically saying how they wanted to punch Gage in the face, and he's received other complaints.
And weren't how many people were there at that school board meeting?
It was, you know, a packed house.
Like hundreds of people, and they were, the only or one of the few families to attend in support of removal?
I'm not aware of anybody else who publicly had said that they wanted removal. So I think they, you know, he said it was the scariest, you know, night of his life, but I think he does have some support in the community, and I know the principal at the school has been checking in on him. So, this is their last week of school here, and so I'm hoping, it will cool down for next year.
Well, Gage Pulliam has accepted our Strong Backbone Free Thought Activism Student Activist Award, and this is a new award that was created by an 80-year-old member of FFRF who wants to remain anonymous, who sent this check when we said we'd like to give out more student activist awards as his own 80th birthday present. And he was very impressed with Gage Pulliam's activism. And so Gage is going to be getting a $1,000 cash scholarship from FFRF. And we hope that will send a message to students in the area that you can be rewarded for speaking up for the First Amendment and not just take flack. And so that's quite a story. But now this is just on the heels of your other victory, removing a whole bunch of Ten Commandments in Tennessee.
It's very similar story in Breathitt County.
Or Kentucky.
Kentucky.
Sorry.
You're right. Similar scenario, student reports and sends a photo of these Ten Commandments postings on all the classroom walls and office walls throughout the school. The situation there is a little bit unique because the state is actually running the school system there after there were various scandals and problems with their superintendent and school board. The state had taken over, and so we ended up writing the Department of Education of Kentucky to try to get this issue resolved. Like in Oklahoma, they agreed with our legal analysis and said these postings can't remain, and so those were removed just within the last few weeks as well.
And weren't there something like 300 of these? They were throughout all the schools?
These were in every school. This was, a larger school district, and so in all of the schools, at least, that our student had attended and reported on.
And, you know, what makes this so amazing to me is that Stone versus Graham, this case that the Supreme Court issued that said you don't put Ten Commandments up in public schools, came out of Kentucky. And so here we are in Kentucky having to tell them this very clear law.
Yeah, I mean, it's well over 30 years later now that, you know, who knows how long, you know, these seem to have been a longstanding violation as well. So thanks to our student complainant, you know, future students won't have to deal with this.
And also thanks to Mr. Stone, and he's a member, this attorney who took this lawsuit is a member of FFRF, and we keep hoping to get him on Free Thought Radio to talk about that very historic rulings that he won.
That decision has been engraved in stone, hasn't it?
So, you know, kudos to him too, and to you, Patrick. And, you know, there was one other story about this that this, I think you mentioned this is, there were irregularities going on in the school district.
Yeah, the reason that the state had taken over, you know, there were problems with apparently being money being spent improperly, but also the former superintendent who, you know, had been there for a number of years allowing these Ten Commandments up is apparently now in prison for a vote buying scheme involved with some other local elections. And so there was certainly they weren't following the law in a lot of respects in this county. And I think, you know, maybe this is just a symptom of that. People who aren't going to follow the Constitution have, you know, they had a number of problems. And so right now, you know, there's a state appointed superintendent overseeing the school district because of the problems with the former superintendent.
So clearly having being surrounded by Ten Commandments does not necessarily make you more moral.
Agreed.
They were breaking the law and breaking the Ten Commandments. So.
And Patrick, you've also been following the Kuntz, Texas situation. I think we talked about that briefly last week, where the cheerleaders are holding up these Bible verses, you know, Jesus saves, New Testament verses, as part of the official beginning of football games in this small town in Texas. And there was a very weird order last week by a judge saying that was fine. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, like you said, I think it's a very odd procedural case. These cheerleaders brought suit under the Texas Constitution saying they had a right to display banners. The school district actually adopted a policy saying this is government speech. These banners are government speech. We will review these. We will maintain control. But both the school district and the cheerleaders, the attorneys for the cheerleaders, Liberty Institute, filed a motion with the court to say, well, just issue a ruling saying we're not violating any law, including the Establishment Clause, and this will satisfy both parties.
In state court, right?
In state court, and a Texas judge granted both of their wishes. And so their
wish was the same, so you really didn't have a controversy.
There's
right?
really no, and that's a big deal under the Texas Constitution. There has to be a case or controversy. The courts can't issue advisory opinions, and so there's really a big procedural problem with a ruling like that on an issue where the parties that would be in interest, students who are harmed, aren't able to make their argument to the court. And so I think there's some serious problems with the order that the judge issued.
And of course, we got involved in this. It was Stephanie Schmidt, who was our staff attorney last summer, who wrote that letter. And then the superintendent told the cheerleaders to stop doing this unconstitutional thing. And then the cheerleaders turned around and sued the school district. So FFRF isn't actually a party to the case, but we would like to take a case in federal court if we have complainants where this is happening in communities.
And we think it would be subject to constitutional challenge in federal court.
That's right. Now I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
And we are talking with Patrick Elliott, FFRF staff attorney, about some of his very good victories ending state church violations in the public schools. And when we come back, Patrick, you're going to talk about, Wisconsin vouchers a little bit?
Yeah.
And you were also telling us it's that time of year for
Gideon Bible distribution, so okay. We can talk about that.
So we'll talk more about what we're doing to stop those things in just a minute.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is more of the album Flow, featuring an FFRF member, Addison Fry. The tune is For Starters.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we're continuing our conversation with Patrick Elliott, a staff attorney at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We've been talking about the Ten Commandments and about religious verses on football banners. But now, what about the Gideons, Patrick? You say it's that time of year. What are the Gideons doing, and what are we doing about it?
Well, it's an annual complaint, and it typically comes up both in the fall and in the spring, I suppose, when the weather's right, when they schedule these visits. But, you know, the Gideons are notorious, I'd say, for visiting public schools and pushing the bounds of what would be permissible. They'll go into the schools. They'll take
often
whatever.
With principals. Permission, yeah, which is illegal.
With encouragement or being complicit in the distributions. And
but
so,
who are they and what do they do?
Well, I mean...
They're men's organization that started here in Wisconsin, Dan.
And you know, evangelists, you know, trying to give the Bible specifically to fifth grade students if possible, but to other public school students, you know, the unchurched students
and,
is who
and women can't be full members. We can only be auxiliary members to help the men.
I knew who they were. I was just asking for the audience.
I know.
I mean, I'm
So I didn't even know about this. There's so much going on in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. They caused a car accident.
Well, this
at
is
the
a,
high school.
This is a complaint that came in this week. You know, we've been saying for years about, I guess, the secondary effects of some of these distributions if they're on school property, especially blocking sidewalks. Not allowing people to leave the building by causing a jam up, you know, if the Gideon's standing right outside the school door on school property. We received a complaint this week from a parent who, you know, didn't know this was going to happen, but showed up at the high school, actually, where this distribution was taking place. And in the parking lot, the Gideons were going door to door on the cars leaving the parking lot and trying to hand out Bibles. And so.
And that is school property. They shouldn't be there.
We're told it was on, you know, on the school parking lot on school property. And so apparently it's this big. You know, cause a big commotion, people, you know, getting Bibles, cars getting jammed up. And the parent reported, you know, during this going on, somebody's trying to make a left turn and there's a car accident. The car gets hit. Apparently some students or some the passengers were injured. Ultimately, the police had to come. So it sounds like these, you know, it's not that these distributions are innocent. They do cause a disturbance
at
schools.
Yeah, well, and I mean, and they also usually target fifth graders. I mean, this was high schoolers, but they'll, you know, we've had cases where they were, we were told by parents that they were throwing Bibles at their kids.
Into the bus windows. They were throwing Bibles in the bus.
Or is they were forcing them on them, or the kids would see them and try to cross a busy street even if they weren't on school property. And also teaching small children to take a gift from a stranger.
Yeah, and so, we've had other, I mean, people have complained about them taking photographs, which obviously parents are very concerned about men taking photographs of their child at school. So there are a lot of problems. That's not just... the Bible being distributed. There's a lot that goes on, I think, when this disturbance hits public schools.
Well, and they just look weird and cultish. Or these middle-aged, older men with black coats and ties, and they're standing outside, you know, they just have this kind of...
predatory appearance. And now, you did stop a cancellation in North Carolina?
Yeah, and we received a complaint from a parent in the elementary school, again, the fifth-grade students, and sometimes we see this where... there was a permission slip that went home that the school was basically instituting, collecting permission
illegally.
Slips, noting about the Gideon distribution that was going to be taking place. We wrote to the school district, firstly asking for their policies on this because we couldn't find anything that would authorize the school to distribute literature to elementary school students in this way. We did get a reply back from the attorneys for the school district, basically acknowledging this was against school policy. And so... they have a very good policy that wouldn't allow outside groups, unless they're very specific circumstances, to distribute any materials to students. And so this was more so bringing to their attention and implementing the policies that they have. And so here you had a school principal, you know, conducting this distribution in contradiction to a school policy that was already on the books. And so I think that's important for parents to remain vigilant and to understand, know what your school policies are on these distributions.
Now, speaking of remaining vigilant, let's spend the remaining couple minutes left talking about the Wisconsin voucher threat. And Patrick, you've been working on that a lot.
You know, we've been monitoring this for several months. It's a part of Governor Walker's budget is to increase funding up to $94 million for increased voucher funding.
And most of that's going to go to private, quote unquote, parochial.
Well, we'll all go to private schools.
Religious schools for the most part.
We know from Milwaukee and Racine that these are upwards of 85% religious schools that are going to receive the funding, especially the schools that are already in existence in these new areas of expansion are going to be religious schools. So this is both for special needs vouchers is one proposal, but also for voucher expansion to some large cities, which
including
would include
Madison.
Madison, Wisconsin. And so we had our some of our legislators write an op-ed explaining why this was going to be a problem for Madison schools.
That just came out this week, Senator Risser and so on. Now, in Racine, you're noting that they had to levy a voucher tax to make up the costs.
Well, they did have, this is what the legislators point out, you know, vouchers just recently expanded to Racine. They did have increased taxes because, you know, the idea is this is going to save money. But in reality, the public schools are getting some of their funding cut, and so they need to make that up by increasing property tax leveling. So that's what happened in Racine.
Now, why should we be concerned about these vouchers? What are some of the problems?
I mean, accountability is one big problem. We know just from the little research I've done in terms of the Milwaukee program, there's fundamentalism being taught in these schools. They use materials by Abeka Books, which is a publisher that's advancing creationism and revisionist history. So our tax dollars are going to fund those ideas. There's a lot of
What about the lower test scores?
The test scores from the fall were just released as well. The voucher schools, on average, all performed lower on reading and math than the public schools in both Milwaukee and Racine. So the argument that this is a better education isn't even bearing any truth to it.
It's really just trying to hold out something that the idea is it was elitist and hard to get in, would somehow be better if you're poor. Very fraudulent idea. I mean, our public schools need bolstering. So what should people do, Patrick?
Contact your legislators, the Senate,
right
the
away.
House.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dave McCann, for producing another great episode of Free Thought Radio, and Buzz Kemper for announcing it. Find out more at ffrf.org/radio.
Join FFRF at ffrf.org, or you can phone 1-800-335-4021, and your membership supports Free Thought Radio's broadcast and podcast, and it supports our four staff attorneys and their hard work. It supports FFRF's 12, soon to be 13, lawsuits, and so we'd really appreciate your help. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday.